Good morning. It's Ken Connors alongside Walter Assey, President, CEO of Renovco. Walter, good morning.
Good morning, Ken. How are you?
I'm very good. Full disclosure, Walter is out of studio. We have him on Zoom. The line sounds absolutely fantastic. So if you want to talk to Walter, 514-790-0800. A lot of rain out there this morning, Walter. And so on that note, right out of the gate on the text line, someone's worried about water and infiltration and wants to know what's involved in installing a window well and how expensive could it be?
It's not actually expensive. It's more the manual labor. I mean, a lot of it, to be quite frank, you could be done yourself. There's nothing too complicated about it. It's typically you want to, you know, buy the window well component, bolt it to your foundation, and dig deep enough, put enough gravel for the water with the drain at the bottom for the water to drain to the French drain. The gravel serves to kind of filter down the water, so no debris goes down and blocks the drain. And that's just about it. What's important is you want to go with your gravel, don't go to the tip of your window. You want to have a ledge of anywhere between 6 to 8 inches. 8 inches would be preferable, just not to give enough clearance if the snow accumulates around the foundation, or if there's a lot of rain that it fills up the box, it's not really up to the rim that water could go through the window itself. Mm. Also for insurance purposes. So insurances, for example, if you were to have a foundation window that the clearance between the land and the window itself does not clear more than 6 inches, and you do have water infiltrating through this window, there's a very good chance that you're not going to be covered.
Okay.
So most people don't know that, but because it's in the fine print. So it's important, even if you don't have a window well, at least it's important to dig down and keep that, you know, preferably, I like to say 8 inches, yeah, that 8-inch clearance from the land itself.
Walter, the devil's in the details.
always, especially when it comes to insurance policies, yeah. Always.
Let's go to Victoria with a call here at 514-790-0800. Victoria, good morning.
Good morning.
You want to talk, you have a fire smell issue, no?
Yeah, so we had a major house fire back in November 2022. Mm. Everything, the entire basement, we had an apartment, and the basement was completely gone. We have an interior staircase, so it's a duplex. And the wall, the staircase is all wood. They replaced only the piece of stairs going down into the basement, but the landing, as soon as you come in the front door, was never changed. Now what we're finding, and we've complained to the insurance company, is when it's humid in the summertime, you go in the hallway and it smells like fire. They said to us, we did the remediation. If you want, you can tear the wall down. We'll come in, and if we find nothing, you have to pay to redo the entire staircase wall. How, without ripping down this entire wall and costing us thousands of dollars, do we find out where this smell of smoke is coming from?
Hmm. Yeah. So explain to me when they took out, I'm guessing they took out the drywall from these walls?
Yeah, they took out the drywall, and then there was, like, you could see the staircase, the landing itself being made of wood, all of the 2x4s around there, everything that was burnt, I mean, I have pictures of it. What they did was they sprayed it with the white paint.
They sprayed the walls as well?
Well, all of the walls, you mean the concrete walls?
The concrete walls, correct, or the structure, the wood structure. I don't know what what was left. I know the drywall was taken out.
Yeah, everything was taken out. All that was left were 2x4s.
Okay, so did they spray the 2x4s with that white paint that you're mentioning? That white paint is
Yeah.
called PIN, or
Yeah.
it's shellac. It's a type of an odor sealant.
Right.
Did they spray the walls as well?
So they sprayed, from what I can remember, it's been a while. They sprayed all the beams in the basement, the support beams, and if I'm not mistaken, I believe they did spray the 2x4s in the hallway. So it's
Okay.
mostly in the lower area, obviously, because the fire was in the basement. But you can
So there,
still
there,
smell it
yeah.
in the staircase.
So there are two things that we would have to look into. Number one would be where did they spray? Typically, if it was an important fire or a major fire, then you would want to spray literally everywhere. It's not just where you see the calcination or the actual burn, because what you're really spraying for is not just the damage area. You're spraying all the area where the smoke, more in particular, the smoke had went and kind of went through the crevices of the walls and the cracks and got stuck in the cavities. So anywhere there's an insulation in that general vicinity that was not changed, that becomes a problem. Even if they sprayed the bin, and they did not spray enough of it. So the idea behind it cannot be a light coat. You have to see like almost a saturation of white for this to work. So if they did a light coat, and that's usually a very common mistake, then it does not really seal that odd odor in place. That's number one. Number two, this is made for, again, secondary damage areas. So if there are any areas that were charred or burned or blackened, typically, they would have had to replace these. Were any of these components replaced, or all of these components that were charred or burned replaced?
They weren't, and that was my issue with the insurance and the contractor was I was saying this is burnt, like we have pictures of it, and they didn't change it. I had to fight for them to change the basement stairs themselves, where the
Okay.
apartment was, where the fire was. But now,
Okay.
and no, this I know exactly what you mean about the spraying, and it was just a very light spraying, exactly. But now it's sort of how do I go without ripping everything down to have some sort of proof to go with, against the insurance company to say there's still the odor? Because they sent the major major claims inspector, who unfortunately changed at the end of the claim. And when she came in, she was fighting me on all of it, and she just said, "No, there's no smell. I don't smell anything."
Okay.
Okay.
So there are different ways of approaching this. You can call an air quality expert.
Okay.
What you want for this particular case is a chemist. So that's the specialty. So they come in and they do air quality tests for smoke, and they do some swabs to see if there's any soot still in the air.
Okay.
It is through that report that you will start proving your claim.
Okay.
Because, I mean, there is this misconception with insurance companies, unfortunately, and also who you're talking to. We're gonna touch on both ends. I don't know, Ken, how we're doing with the clock,
You know what? Let's
but
take a little break and then you can finish up with Victoria. Victoria, if you don't mind, we'll pick it up on the other side.
thank you.
Okay, don't go anywhere. It's the Home Improvement Show with Walter Rassi. Call now to grab a line at 514-790-0800. Hi, it's Ken Connors alongside Walter Assey from Renovco, answering all your calls and questions at 514-790-0800. Got a couple of mics, a Mike and a Michael standing by to talk to you, Walter, but we're going to wrap up and finish up with Victoria. Victoria, are you still there?
I am, thanks.
Walter, take it away.
Victoria?
Yeah.
Yeah, so a couple of things that are very important. Document everything in writing.
Okay.
And do not reach out to the contractor that did the job. You need to reach out to the insurance company directly.
Yeah.
And you need to reach out to the customer service department and not the claims department. So customer service is going to try to escalate this to a supervisor. And that's what you wanna, who you wanna speak with, and you can explain for them the history behind it, the fact that they kept charred and burned material in there because that's technically not supposed to have happened. What you can also do is zero in, because here's the thing, believe it or not, where you're smelling the smoke is not necessarily where the smoke is coming from.
Okay.
So you could think it's possibly the landing, but it could very well be a wall cavity issue as well.
Okay.
But if there's a place where you know for a fact there was burned, calcinated materials, you don't need to completely open it. All what you need is to drill a hole big enough, about like, I don't know, 3-4 inches,
yeah,
that you can actually smell the cavity.
Okay.
Okay. Without having to pay thousands of dollars to fix it in case things don't pan out. But I mean, it has to be fixed one way or the other.
Okay.
You could send them a mise en demeure. You could send them a letter of intent and tell them, look, if this is happening, I'm giving you X amount of days to come and correct it. If not, I will do it myself and I will send you the bill. And then whoever does it, you have an inspector come and, you know, document everything, the smell, the improper application of the bin. Because if this is a major fire and they did not bin well, that problem could also start showing up in different areas. And it doesn't necessarily show up right away. Okay, usually it's hot, humid days. But you will see that, you know, in the areas that were not well fumigated or binned, I should say, would always cause you problems.
Okay.
For resale, it's going to be a big problem as well, because you are going to have to declare the fact that you had a fire.
Yeah.
So automatically, everybody's guards is going to be up, whoever buys the house from you, and then you could potentially be sued in the future. So by you kind of creating all that paper trail right now, you can hold your insurance company responsible for as long as you own and sell the house. And in the future, if you, God forbid, get sued, you can bring them in and guarantee as well. So you kind of drag them into the lawsuit with you.
Okay. And then for air quality, who do I get in touch with? Like, I'm not sure where I would find somebody to test.
There are many companies. There are in Enviro Option, for example. It's called Enviro Option.
Okay.
You could call them and tell them exactly what you're looking for. If that doesn't work, you can call a company called CEP. CEP is a forensics company that is typically hired by insurance companies, but they do have chemists on staff. And, you know, a chemist is, so if they agree to give you that service, what is great about them is all insurance companies know them. So they will look at their reports very seriously. But I'm not sure if they service individuals. If not, they can refer you to other companies that have a chemist on staff.
All right.
But try Enviro Option. Enviro Option could be a very good option to start with.
Victoria, lots of great information there.
Thank you so much.
Thank you and good luck with that. That's Victoria. Let's move on to, we have Mike standing by. Hi, Mike.
Good morning to you on this rainy day.
Yeah.
my question concerns an 8x12 garden shed, commercially built garden shed,
yeah.
Nicely built, but it was set directly on the ground, and over the past 20 years or so, now the foundation, which I presume was originally 2x6 joists, I presume it was 2x6, are all rotten and the floor is rotten. The question is, the rest of the shed is fine. The right question is, how do I get to rebuild the foundation, as it were, the joists and so on, with the shed sitting on top of it?
With a lot of difficulty.
This is a common problem, Walter, with the cabanos, I think, eh?
Yeah, well, I mean, it's what is really sitting on is not really the foundation. That's really the floor. And what they did is they just, brought the cabano and probably just even the land and just put it there. So, which is obviously not the right way to do it. Now, it depends what is rotten. So if it is the... and where it's rotten, if it's because what technically you could do is you could lift it by section and you can change it by section. If it's in the middle of, if the rot is towards the middle of the floor, it's not a biggie. You could just take out the plywood from inside and you could replace the 2x6s or whatever structure you have underneath one by one, obviously. Where it's going to really get to be more difficult if it's more towards the edges. So if you do have some type of a rim joist or anything like that, that becomes a bit more difficult. But you might need, I don't know how big it is, you might have to lift it in order to adequately take care of it in certain areas.
Well, that's it. I mean, I suspect the whole thing is all the joists and the periphery is rotten too, and yes, I would have to lift it, but how in the heck would you lift it to get underneath to put in a new floor and then put it back on top?
Well, I mean, what we've done in the past is there's different ways depending on the size. I don't know what size is it.
8x12.
8x12. So I mean, typically what you could do is you can so what you do is you kind of dig underneath and you drive like some type of pylons in order to kind of put it on a different bed, if you want. So it's like what you're doing is you're lifting it by section and then you are shimming from underneath to kind of lift that whole area and have it supported. And then when you do the trick is when you do the repairs is you're doing it by section. So you're not, for example, if you do have a rim joist, you are cutting and replacing the rim joist by section because you don't want, obviously, the walls to give in. The other more costly way is you have a crane and you kind of lift it and you do it that way and you pay them by hour. You just have a couple of carpenters. They need 3-4 hours and then that would be another way to have it done as well. But at the end of the day, you want to also cost it out to see all of this work. Is it worth it versus the new cabano, unfortunately, because, it gets to be expensive if you're going to have a crane and framers and everything else. Yeah. But a crane would typically cost you about a couple of $100 per hour. I think 4 hours to framers is more than enough. So if you want to just cost it that way. And then the material that is involved as well.
Well, thank you.
All right, okay. Mike, appreciate the call. Walter, it's 2 minutes ago before news, and so we are just going to... I'm going to throw something at you from the text line, if you don't mind.
Of course.
It says, good morning, Walter. I have a heat pump installed last fall. It ran in heat mode all last winter with no effect on the radio in my kitchen. Now when I run the heat pump, it causes static on my radio. What might be the cause of this static issue, if you can? That's from Ed.
Wow. I've never heard that one before. I'm not even sure it's related to a heat pump. I can't answer that. I really have no idea. If
That's all
any
right.
of the listeners can help,
All
that would
right.
be awesome, because I can't really. I mean, I can reach out in the break for my heat pump guy and ask him, but I've never heard that one before.
Ed, I threw it at him, and we came up empty, but that's fine. That happens every now and then. Don't worry about it. Walter, we're coming right back with more of your phone calls at 514-790-0800 here on the Home Improvement Show. Five one four seven nine zero zero eight hundred is the number to call and talk to Walter from Renovco, and we're going to get right back to the phone line and bring in.
Ken,
yes, Walter. Sorry,
I went to work actually. My HVAC guy was kind enough to he was listening, and I have some answers for the gentleman that texted earlier.
Oh, about the static.
About the static, yeah. So I mean, obviously, it's a question of electromagnetic interference. What he's saying is a couple of things that could be the issue is he might have some grounding issues with his electrical. So what one of the quick fixes he could do is try to move the radio away from the heat pump to see if the interference goes down or changes. You can also try. Grounding. If you have any issues with the ground, you can do what you call a shielding. He said, if you put a foil over the power cord or the antenna, that might help the interference as well.
Mm-hmm.
Adding a filter to the heat pump power line or the radio power supply that could work as well. So it's more likely than not it's a grounding issue. He would have to call an electrician to check it out. But I mean, if he doesn't want to, he could try these like home tips, if he wish, DIY tips beforehand to kind of see if that solves the problem.
Very good. Thank you, Walter. Right back to the phone line here. Michael, thank you for waiting. You want to talk to Walter about the central air conditioning, right?
That's right.
Go ahead.
I own a condo that has a individual central air conditioning unit that sits on the roof of the building. The control panel in my condo controls both heat and air conditioning. And obviously at this time of the year, I've been using the air conditioning portion of the control panel. But the heat has gone on by itself. So the system was fighting as to the heat and the air conditioning. So what I've had to do is close the breaker for the heat so that I only have air conditioning. So I'm wondering why the heat would go on, so what the issue is, and I'm trying to get a sense of what the cost may be to repair that, and any recommendations as to any companies that would take on clients to repair this at this time of the year.
So it's more likely a thermostat issue than a unit issue. Any HVAC company, the good news for you, it's a quick fix. So you don't need necessarily a company that specializes in that unit itself. So any HVAC company that is in your area can come in and potentially have to replace the thermostat itself or look if there's any loose wiring in there. But I don't believe at all it's any. The good news is that really. Probably a problem in the in the unit itself. It's just in the command something is not right, and
so
typically that's
the,
due to a thermostat fault. Yeah, go ahead.
So if I change the command box myself, because I could order one and just put it in, do you think that would be able to resolve the issue?
That could be that's the most common issue. Okay, so that's the more likely reason you have that issue. How old is that thermostat?
The thermostat is only 3 years old.
Okay. And is it 3 years old? All right.
3 years.
Yeah. I mean, it could be, it could very well be the thermostat. I'm not saying it's the only thing, but I mean, first, before you replace it, just open it up, check the connections, make sure that nothing is loose in there and anything like that. If that doesn't work, then I would, look into the thermostat first before I would call an HVAC guy.
Mm-hmm.
So I call a HVAC person, not a central air conditioning person.
Well, I mean, HVAC is a central air conditioning, right? So it's a ventilation technician. That's what it is.
Right. Any recommendations with regard to the companies that would do that? Because right now, most of them are not taking on new appliance.
So the best trick is to call the companies that are servicing your area. So, you know, the thing is, with most of these companies, they like to stay within a certain territory. So if you are in the West Island, you know, I would start with these guys and go down the list.
Okay.
That's what I would do. But you might not even, if you can change the thermostat yourself,
I can.
Then you might not even need them, to be quite frank with you. Just let me know what happens.
I
First,
will.
Check the connections. Second, let's do that, and you know, you might save. Trust me, buying a thermostat is going to be cheaper than getting a technician in there. So,
okay.
And that's the first thing they're going to look at.
But Michael, I'm with you. I couldn't change it myself either. I need someone to come in and do that.
Thank you. I'm suffering to know.
You know, the other trick I can give you is, I mean, if it's just a question of changing a thermostat, electricians can do that as well. So you don't necessarily need an HVAC guy. You can have an electrician come and change the thermostat for you.
Right.
Okay, if that I don't find any of.
All right.
Yeah.
Michael.
So the reason I'm saying HVAC, if you're going to pay that service call, it's because they could do other troubleshooting if that is not the culprit.
Yeah.
Right.
That's the only reason.
Right. Okay.
But, I mean, if need be and you can't find, then start with an electrician, I guess.
Right. Good luck with it, Mike.
Thank you very much.
Bye now. Look at the time, 9:41. Let's go to, Donna's been waiting patiently. Donna, to talk about your ceramic floor, right?
Yes, good morning.
Good morning.
I had my kitchen redone, and they put down a ceramic floor. It's a couple of weeks since they put down the floor. The kitchen's in the process of being completed. And now when I walk on certain areas, I feel like the tiles are shifting. It's so weird. And some of the grout between the tiles seems to be, I guess, sinking into the floor. What do I do?
Okay. So let me ask you a few questions
sure.
about the preparation. They took, what kind of a floor did you have before?
Ceramic.
So they took out the ceramic floor.
They were supposed to take, yes.
And what did they do to prepare the subfloor?
I believe they put down plywood, and then after that, I wasn't around. I was working. So if he did something during the day, I don't know.
Okay. Now, the plywood that he installed, would you know the thickness of the plywood?
No, I don't, unfortunately.
Okay. So what he did is he doubled the plywood. He took out the one layer of ceramic, took out maybe the old layer of plywood you had in there. There was already an existing layer of plywood, and he kind of doubled it, right?
I would assume so, yes, because it seems like when I walk out of my kitchen into my living room, dining room, or hall, it looks like it was picked up a little bit because it's much higher than the floor. So I assume, yes.
All right. Okay. And do you remember if he put any PL glue before he installed the plywood and screwed it?
I
or
don't.
He just...
Unfortunately, you know what, when you go to work and you come back and he's gone, hello.
Okay. All right. So let me tell you what the possibilities are. And if he is installing the kitchen, I would strongly recommend that he stops the installation until the floor issue is addressed, because that tile eventually will either pop out or it will crack, and this is a chronic problem they're going to have for a long time if you don't address it right now. So the main common mistakes that contractors do is, number one would be the size of the plywood. So anything below half an inch should not be installed when you are installing a second layer of plywood, because it curls and it creates waves when you put the screws in, and that actually causes that void that you hear in the ceramic tile. So that would be number one. Number two, is the back dipping. So what he probably end up doing, this is another possibility, or it could be both possibilities because we've seen both mistakes happen in one job, is he did not back dip his tile.
He
meaning
didn't
he
back
puts
his
the,
tile like that?
So what he does usually is he put his trowel on the floor, he put the cement glue, and you, what you need to do is you need to put cement glue as well on the tile itself in order to have proper adherence. So a lot of them, you know, skip that step, and that creates that void that you feel. It's what it is. It's the tile itself did not set well or glue well with the cement glue. Okay, so that would be the second thing you want to look for. You know, what we do now is we don't usually double with plywood. We use Ditra. So the fact that he used an extra plywood, it's a bit curious for me, because the good thing with the Ditra, it makes a much more solid installation for the ceramic, but it's not high, so it barely takes any height. And that way you could have kept possibly the same height of the other floor without having that step up that you're talking about right now. So a Ditra would have been a way better option for you. So what you're going to do is you're going to ask him to take out the ceramic. You're going to check and verify the size of, or you can even ask him what size plywood he installed. And then when you take out the ceramic that is loose, you can see yourself if there's a back dip. So because typically if you would have had, you know, if you would have put cement on the back, it would show on the tile itself. If you don't see it, that means you did not back dip it, and that's going to create you other problems in the future. So now it starts with 3-4 tiles, and then eventually you're going to see a lot more tiles are going to start doing the same thing.
Right back at it here, 9:51. Right back at it with Walter Assey from Renovco to answer your calls. We're going to finish up with Donna, who's been patient on the phone. Donna, hi.
Hi.
Okay, where are we at?
So I mean, basically what needs to be done is for you as a homeowner to understand what happened. And it's important, because if that person is not qualified to do ceramic tiles, so for you to take action. One of the things you could do right away is take out the loosest tile, because usually if they're loose, they should be extremely easy to take out. You take it out, and then you look what's underneath. If you see that the sinset was not applied throughout the complete tile, so it have to have complete coverage. It cannot have partial coverage. So you know that guy did not do a proper installation. If he didn't do a back dipping, if he did not do a proper subflooring, if you see any curling in the plywood, not enough screws on the plywood in order to make sure that, you know, sometimes they install new plywood. But the idea with a new plywood is you want to see a screw every 6 inches. And if you don't, then that plywood is not well anchored to the subfloor. And that will also create a vibration. So every time you are walking, because you don't have enough screws, the plywood would move, and by it moving kind of makes the tile move, which will eventually cause that grout to crack and everything else that you're seeing around it. I don't think necessarily, because, you know, when we talk about grouts sinking and cracking, it's due to maybe too much water in the mix. But in your case, because you have the loose tiles, that is probably not the case. It's more a problem of the installation itself. That worries me, yeah.
Some of the areas, like I'm standing and looking, and some of the areas where they grouted, like the grout is gone. Like you can see either it sunk in or it disappeared. And what they did was they put tape on the tiles, but if I walk on it, I feel it shifting. So anyway, we'll have to resolve this issue.
So this issue can only be resolved through one thing and one thing only. Do not just, do you know approximately how many tiles are like that? Is it like one tile?
I think they're two big tiles. They're like the big, big ones. I don't know. They're two very big tiles that are shifting.
Yeah. Okay, so let's understand why they shifted, get, pop them out. If you find that it was inadequate installation, then that could also apply to the other tiles that you that are there but have not shifted yet.
Okay.
So you might need to ask him to rip out everything and restart from the beginning in this case.
All right, Donna.
Thank you so much. Have a great day, guys.
You too. We are going to sneak in Christopher here with a couple of minutes left to go. Christopher, you want to talk about a window well?
Hi, yeah. I have the window well. It's 6 inches from the ground to the pane, but not to the frame. So I'm wondering, does Renofco do that kind of thing where they would come and dig down another couple of inches?
I mean, we can. It's too, to be quite frank with you, if you have someone cutting your grass for a landscaper in your area, can do that. What needs to be is 6 inches from the foundation ledge, from the ledge of the foundation. It's not really the window that I care about as much as, you know, so you kind of calculate 6 inches down from there. And it's something that anybody could do. Like, you don't need necessarily a very expensive experienced individual to do the digging and pay the money for it. A guy that cuts the grass that would charge you a lot less. You know, and it's just a question of digging and adding gravel, just ensuring you have enough gravel in the pit. That's another very important thing.
And the other question too is that I'm just wondering, it's not used as a bedroom, it's used more as a storage room. Would it be better just to brick up the window to avoid any kind of leaking?
Not necessarily, no. I mean, breaking up the window is going to cause you, a brick is not a watertight product. So the mortar in the brick is porous.
Okay.
So if you would have accumulation, it would actually, you know, so if you do have a well-caulked window that is adequately installed and a well-functioning window well, you honestly don't need to worry about water infiltration.
Okay.
The window well drain is blocked and it's creating problems and what have you. But then just deal with the window well. It's going to cost you a lot cheaper than not bricking a window, because that's not going to work. You would have to concrete the windows. It would have to become part of the foundation. It will cost you cheaper to just adequately do the window well.
Chris, I have 40 seconds left. You want to sneak that last one in?
Yeah. So then what kind of company would come and check the drain to be sure that the drain is clear in the window well?
Landscapers. So usually any hardscapers can do that. So again, if you have a landscaping company, especially on your streets, they're cutting neighbors' lawns or what have you, ask them, they will come and this is typically there. Anybody that lay down pavers, they do hardscaping, landscaping, they'll be more than capable of assisting with that. And then you can do it yourself. What you do is you dig down, usually at 24 to 36 inches, you will see that black pipe. And then once you see it, you look into it, you see if it's blocked. What you could do is you put a hose and see if it's blocked, it's going to overflow right away.
Okay, great. Thank you very much.
My pleasure.
Thank you for the call. Hey, Walter, another great hour, my friend. Thank you.
Always a pleasure, Ken. Always a pleasure.
We'll be back next week with another edition of the Home Improvement Show.